So our hymn today is How Great Thou Art. Probably one of the more well-known hymns. Does everybody in here know How Great Thou Art? Or at least has heard it before?
No, never. Yes.
Hey, I would have thought that you guys would know Blessed Assurance, and you didn't, so...
I don't know.
I'm a little thrown off on what hymns to expect.
So. I don't
know. So, as usual, we will sing it first, and then... Sings my soul. That's a little high. Let's put it on half step.
How great thou art.
Oh. Yeah. Promise Keepers version?
Yeah, I don't know. I just...
Yeah.
I'm not familiar with that. Cameron Seaton Mitchell, did you just eat the rest of my pie?
You have no proof.
I saw Nathan, we're going to fight. Actually,
picture didn't have it. The camera wasn't even pointed on you. You can't. There's no proof.
Okay.
Children.
Let's walk
he ate my
through.
Pie.
No proof. Picture
let's,
it didn't have it.
Let's make sure we understand the song we just sang. O Lord my God, when I in awesome wonder consider all the worlds thy hand hath made. That's an introductory phrase, not a complete sentence. What's he saying with that?
Made a lot of stuff. Now I can look at it.
When made a lot
about,
of stuff.
When I think about how much you've made.
Wow, it's all so cool.
When I think about what you made. And I see the stars and hear the rolling thunder and think about thy power throughout the universe displayed. Main thought.
Awesome wonder.
Then my soul sings.
My soul sings. And what does my soul sing?
My Savior, God, should be happy in the right program.
Yeah.
God, you are awesome.
Yeah, how great thou art, how great thou art. God, you're awesome. That's we'll wait until all the rest of the pie dealers die.
Stop congregating at the water.
I'll get it. And I said, I'll eat it.
She gave me some agua.
So I did.
See. Gracias. Tomato. Guacamole. Fresh avocado.
Fresh avocado.
Enchiladas.
You
know?
No. Fresh avocado. Chicken. Like fresh avocado. It was on like a sign. It was a vine.
Oh, gosh.
It said.
That's
a,
hey, look!
It was. It said fresh avocados. The guy just. There were like two spaces.
Yeah, there was space in between free shabak adu.
Free shabak
adu.
Okay.
Moving.
So the point of the first verse in the chorus was.
Guy.
Yeah. Alright.
So cool that my soul sings
yeah.
by itself without me telling it to.
Yeah.
That's a cool guy.
Went through the woods and the forest glade, I wonder, I hear the birds sing sweetly through the trees. When I look down from lofty mountain grandeur and see the brook and feel the gentle breeze.
What's it's the same thing.
Same thing, yeah.
Yeah, cool guy. Cool guy did all this.
I see the creation, and it makes me go, wow.
Ooh.
How great thou art.
I'm just going to say, because what if I say a once
ooh. Ah. Ew. And sometimes why. No. Yeah? Yeah? And when I think of God, okay, so this is where the thought changes a little bit. Okay.
Bravo!
Wow.
Bravo.
We got new lyrics.
Sorry.
And when I think that God, his son, not sparing, sent him to die, I scarce can take it in. That's a complete thought. What's the complete thought?
He's like, he's affirming truths written in the Bible.
Yeah,
it's what,
like, how, why?
Yeah, it's I scarce can take it in, meaning I'm floored. I can't comprehend it. That
yeah.
God would send his son to die and not spare him. Right. And spare him from the cross. That on that cross, my burden gladly bearing, he bled and died to take away my sin. How might you summarize that in one word?
Jesus was happy to do it.
Atonement.
He gladly went on board.
Atonement, yeah. Jesus was happy to do it, yes.
That's three.
I was thinking gospel, but.
That's
yeah.
four words.
Hmm? What, did someone say in three words or something?
I said in one word.
No, I didn't hear
him say that. That's all right. Yeah, I was thinking gospel. That's the gospel, essentially, right? Christ died to take away your sins. Then sing, okay, so when I think about this particular truth, the atonement, my soul sings. And then lastly, when Christ shall come with shout of acclamation and take me home, what joy shall fill my heart. What's he talking about now?
Resurrection,
yeah. If we're depending on his theological bent, he might be talking about rapture or just end times being in its totality. With shout of acclamation, anybody know what verse that's referencing? No, it's talking about there. Give you another hint. It's the main rapture passage.
Oh, I thought is it Thessalonians?
1 Thessalonians 4. Yeah. And take me home. What joy shall fill my heart? Then I shall bow in humble adoration, and there proclaim, and then proclaim, my God, how great Thou art. What's he gonna do? In less words than that.
Hallelujah.
Yeah.
Be resurrected and praise God for eternity.
Yeah, he's going to worship, and I shall bow. Praise God for eternity. And then, of course, the chorus again. One of the things in particular that makes this song so well known and so powerful is that tune, a very memorable tune to do, 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 do. It's just very, like, rousing and makes you want to sing along. Anyway.
Did y'all hear that?
Yes.
What happened?
Way down. Just never mind.
Okay. I'll pretend I don't know what you're talking about.
Do you know what they're talking about?
No.
And why would you need to pretend?
Good point.
What are they?
You
want to
read
about?
Along?
My mom whispered to Hannah, "Be like, he said doo doo."
Did I say doo doo?
Like
oh.
Okay.
See what you do.
So if you want, your face is hilarious right now.
She's trying to hold it back so hard. It's not working though.
What's coming out my eyes?
Just think about what Stephen didn't say.
No.
I don't know what he couldn't have said.
No,
but
that's
I'm trying to distract you. I'm trying to distract you. Although introduced to American audiences when Mr. James Caldwell sang How Great Thou Art at Stony Brook Bible Conference on Long Island in 1951, it was not until Cliff Barrows and Beverly Shea and the Billy Graham evangelistic team used it during the famed London Crusade in Haringey Arena that How Great Thou Art started to become universally well known.
Thanks. How did you know that? That was impressive.
What year was that?
That's
because it says it was not until just sometime after that.
The Haringey Arena concert.
Yeah, I mean, whenever Billy Graham was doing his thing. So what, 70s, 80s?
Was it? I don't know.
Not today's urge.
Oh, he is wearing the shoes.
The second paragraph on there, do you want to read along? The original Swedish text was a poem entitled O Stora Gud, written by a Swedish pastor, the Reverend Carl Boberg, in 1886. In addition to being one of the leading evangelical preachers of his day, Boberg was also the successful editor of the periodical Sanningsvitnet. His inspiration for this text is said to have come from a visit to a beautiful country estate on the southeast coast of Sweden. He was suddenly caught in a midday thunderstorm with awe-inspiring moments of flashing violence followed by a clear, brilliant sun. Soon afterwards, he heard the calm, sweet songs of the birds in nearby trees. The experience prompted the pastor to fall to his knees in humble adoration of his mighty God. He penned this exaltation in a 9-stanza poem, beginning with the Swedish words, O stort Gud, när jag den vald beskadar, meaning, O great God, when I see that world. Several years later, Boberg, where did I left my place, was attending a meeting in the province of Värmland, and was surprised to hear the congregation sing his poem to the tune of an old Swedish melody. It's unknown how the poem got out. Yeah. The subsequent history of this hymn is most interesting. It is thought that soon after Boberg's version, the text was translated into German by Manfred von Glenn, and entitled Wie groß bist du, How Great You Are, or How Great Are You. Later in 1925, Reverend E. Gustav Johnson of Northland Park College, Chicago, made the first literal English translation from the Swedish text. This translation is quite different from the text that we know today, but may still be found in some hymnals. Johnson's literal translation of the Swedish text is entitled, O Mighty God, When I Behold the Wonder. In 1927, I.S. Plokhanov came upon the German version and translated it into the Russian language. In 1933, the Reverend S.K. Hine and his wife, English missionaries, were ministering to the people of the Ukraine. It was there they learned the Russian translation of O Stort Gud from a congregation of Ukrainians. They remember singing it as a duet in the dark, unevangelized places, and then telling effect it had on the unsaved. The thought of writing original lyrics to this song did not then occur to them. That was to await their crossing into Subcarpathian Russia, where the mountain scenery was to play its part. The thoughts of the first three verses in English were born, line upon line, amid unforgettable experiences in the Carpathian Mountains. The fourth verse was written later in English. Thus, inspired partially by the Russian words, partially by the awesome wonder at the sight of all the works thy hand hath made, the thoughts of the first two verses sprang into life in English. The third verse was written during further evangelistic work in Russia. When war broke out in 1939, what war are we talking about?
WW2.
There you go. It was necessary for Reverend Hine and his wife to return to Britain. Now armed with these three verses, the writer continued his gospel campaign during the Blitz years. The fourth verse did not come until after the war. The tune for this hymn is an arrangement made of an old Swedish folk melody. With his original lyric and his arrangement of the Swedish folk melody, Mr. Stuart K. Hine published what we now know today as the hymn How Great Thou Art. I think the history of the translation of the hymn is interesting. Mm-hmm. From Swedish to German to Russian to English. And there's another English version out there that's closer to the original poem.
Nobody really knows. God,
yeah. Oh, we need to spend a little bit of time in prayer. So, if you don't want to break up into groups, do like 10 minutes of prayer.
I think Cameron needs some extra prayer this week.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Me too,
yeah.
Hey, I'm doing great. Just because I haven't done hardly any work in emotions tomorrow and Tuesday doesn't mean I need it.
So 10 minutes. 4:27. Come back. Regroup.
Haven't you used that one before?
Yes.
I'm not moving.
We're praying for 10 minutes. Figured two groups. How many of us are there? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
That's
two groups?
No, it can't be
one.
I guess I'm
trying
to
stop real busy. Just
I actually thought
every game
going
on. Yeah?
I saw that. I think. Is that you? Why the posted videos of everyone like going on?
You're like, oh!
Yeah.
You
have to ask me. We were racing. We were racing around the corner.
Are you guys gonna come over here just like hang out by
yourselves? Sure.
What? You don't.
I actually gotta run through this real quick.
No, Stephen, prayer is more important.
You're right.
Well, let's go.
And nobody else wants to steal it.
No, I don't know. Like, a lot of the ones
that
are
definitely
the ones.
I love the guys.
The guys are lame.
So it's a what?
Right.
So, Northwest, instead of doing, like, student life, you camp eagle.
Retests.
Just like Pine Cove, just on steroids.
So,
and none of the guys
it's
ever, like,
it's more annoying because you have to walk farther than someone's
going
to
do. So. But it's like $450 to go.
Probably
classes.
Still a lot of money.
Physics. What's that school?
Yeah, my that's the one.
Vectors. Yeah. What do we get the actual physics?
That is still going on. When do you get your break?
Wait till you get ours.
I guess we're recommending.
Well, I don't plan on doing politics.
That's basically
it.
It did for me.
Well, I don't know how long it is. I just know when it is. Like, I think it's about 2 weeks.
Oh, okay.
That's nice.
Yeah, I'm
going to
have to
work. How about
oh,
you?
Yeah.
What?
I saw you guys.
Are you going
to yeah.
Oh, yeah. Just
Friday.
Time management.
What time?
That's okay.
1:30, you were
so
on the road.
Just look at that.
I was in my discount tire.
That's what I did.
Yeah, I was, you're always taking it on.
Yeah.
To get out of the water.
No.
Yeah.
Me.
My van is, I was leaving from lunch at the church.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That traffic is in
the car.
No.
It wasn't.
I
guess everything's not okay. Can we have just not had much of a desire to, like, pray or read my Bible or. And that's not good.
Like 8,000 hertz.
So.
But that's extremely high frequencies.
I don't know what
you
should
do. Don't do anything with it.
No, unfortunately, it's been going on a little bit.
That's
what
I'm praying that.
That's probably part of it. I mean, that's.
Is the contract with the Army for the day?
Anyway.
Or is it just for going to the
Army? That's hard.
It's
a big one.
4 to 7 years. I've got to run your school.
Oh, nice.
Then I go through.
Me now, I guess?
That's fire. Transition.
Probably just staying on top of all the school that I have to do. Because there's a lot of it, and a couple things are usually really complicated. So I have to be ready to spend 5 or 6 hours on it.
My eye's been twitching.
And then do the other. So,
could be a biological issue.
Time management and understanding.
It actually is very, it keeps on twitching like all day.
And sleep. I don't get enough sleep.
I don't know. It's like, oh, it's happening again.
Focus
on what needs to happen now to make things happen later.
I mean, just like overall life-wise?
Yeah.
John Carter's needs
to his retesting father. You give him clarity of mind.
And the same thing is things. Just having trouble picking stuff up and starting. After that, it goes easy. It's just the starting.
You know, you stay focused. Maintain a clear sight on his goals. Things he wants to achieve.
Pray for me for school work.
Jonathan.
A lot going on.
You also stay focused.
And I really need to start my thesis. I'm supposed to have the first two chapters done.
Really get all the ducks in a row before he heads off to.
Oh, hey, Josh!
Is this a schedule that you've
starting the rest
made
of
for yourself, or is this
starting
no, like
chapter,
the two first two chapters are due November 1st.
You
have like,
we don't even know.
But that's dictated by your instructor or by your mentor.
Even then, after your own
Technically, all the due dates are flush with that.
Caleb.
But
then
we get it done.
Yeah.
Really even started writing it.
He was just blessing in his days. There's irritation. I thought you would help me doing that. Whether it be
through school,
stress, or something else. Just
focus.
Rest easy.
I know there's stuff.
I literally spelled school S-K-O-L until I was about 16.
That doesn't sound like something you should
do. I know, right? It made more sense. S-C-H-O-L doesn't make any sense.
Because it's based off of a German word, in German is S-C-H-U-L-E, shoe like you. There you go.
Hopefully that one. So we should be pronouncing it
Schuhhaus. Schuhhaus.
Yes. Greater.
This should go to Schuhhaus.
Tim is tomorrow. He's still got C A M A I.
That's not tomorrow.
15
is right. That's how Tamara's spelled
it. Yeah, I know.
It's a whole lot easier than remembering one M and two R's.
Just remember Tom or your father.
If you pronounce it tomorrow, you will have
it
tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
I said, is he Canadian? He said yes. I said yes. His name is Bruce. Yeah, I guess I should have known that.
Also, the other moment I thought was pretty cool.
Just
go ahead and just hope that thing interrupts that, like, dad.
Lord, I grieve for a while. I thank you for allowing us all to
here. Tend to put a damper on
things. I pray that, thank you for waking us up this morning. Just ask that you give us direction in school. For those of us that are in school, I pray that you give us a direction and focus, Lord, that we would not stray away from the path that you set us out for us, and that we would not give in to any distractions or temptations that come with being in school, whether it be out of state or just at school, like public school or public school. So I just pray for that you give us guidance and focus with school.
Lord, I pray in the wake of the recent destruction that you would use it to complete your will, and that everyone involved would see your majesty in the destruction. Pray that we use it as a tool to evangelize and show people you love. To people that might not have been affected, or people that were affected, sharing in the situation and sharing in love and in common ground as we travel on through life. I pray for beginning, for starting, for just the focus to start, to carry on, to even in, to complete goals. I pray that you help us focus and stay cool, and just give us the courage to start anything we need to.
Lord,
I lift up all those of us who are working on time management. Lord, help us to remember why we're here. We're here to serve you and to be guided and be used by you to further your kingdom, Father, and your will. And help us to put others and you before our own selves and our own desires.
Well, I pray for all of us in school stuff that we work well, like I love to you, and all the normal stresses of life and struggles with sin that we all deal with. We ask for grace to endure, to resist temptation, just the devil being free from us, and always return to your spirit. To the living waters that Christ promised to give to the world that have just peace. Peace from God that surpasses all understanding.
Let us think and learn well today as we start studying my prophets. So your son's name is Christ, by the Holy Power of the Holy Spirit.
I'm digging along here.
Thanks.
Oh gosh!
Like way long ago. Fly out of your hat. Back in your hat.
Josh, you want these?
I would love those.
Oh, right. Yeah, who needs pens? In the pluma?
Cool.
Well,
si.
In pluma?
No.
That means pen.
Good job,
Spanish.
Pen means pen. Actually, polígrafo.
Pen is
pen. Polígrafo is
pen.
Another?
Pluma is pluma.
I don't actually really know my Spanish. I just remember that word.
Si.
Technically, chango can mean pen if you really wanted it.
Jonathan,
huh?
Anyone else?
It might be risky.
Well, that one's one too.
So isn't it?
Otro persona?
Huh?
Pluma?
It's Caleb.
Pen?
Make sure there's just toilet paper after.
I
will
say that's
not
right.
But Caleb's
well,
gone.
No, actually, just saw you. Yeah. If there's someone accidentally there, the door is locked.
I think Caleb's in there.
Caleb's
here.
Caleb's
here. Nathan and the...
Oh, right.
It would be Caleb.
Which one?
That makes sense.
Caleb.
Wait.
Different Caleb.
See.
What kind of car is it?
So I'm guessing when he comes out, then you can go in.
Yes,
it's
that's
probably
what
I mean.
Okay.
It might not want to go back in though.
Oh, jeez.
Okay. The we are studying the Minor Prophets. We're starting off, what, 5-6 weeks on the Minor Prophets. The idea being that those books that you probably don't know much of anything about, if somebody were to ask you. If somebody were to ask you, what's Haggai about? And you.
First time you even say it.
Yeah, Haggai is how I was taught. It's actually Haggai.
I was about to say, I've heard it like two or three different ways.
Yeah.
Is it safe to go in, Caleb?
Yeah.
I just want pee.
Okay.
Caleb,
you
didn't use
the
rest of
my Twitter.
So, does anybody here know what Haggai is about?
No.
Who Haggai was,
no.
What he
minor
did.
Prophet.
He was a minor prophet, yeah.
I'm pretty sure he was a minor prophet.
He obviously prophesied about something.
Yeah.
He did prophesy. Yeah, he did prophesy.
So ideally, once this 6-week series is over, you would be able to answer that question somewhat confidently. You'd be like, oh yeah, Haggai. He was one of the post-exilic prophets who was first overseeing the rebuilding of the temple in Jerusalem after the exile. And he's known as the Encourager Prophet. He came in after the temple, you know, stalled for 70 years of rebuilding. Haggai and Zechariah came up and really reinstated the building of the temple and finishing it. That's what it's about, FYI. So that's what you'd want to be able to do. But to do that, you have to know your background. And history and background is incredibly important with the prophets, because otherwise they're just names saying a whole bunch of nothing. If you know the history, if you know the context that they're in, they're saying things that are actually incredibly applicable today, because some of the stuff that they said would happen hasn't happened yet. And so we're still waiting on it to occur. And so knowing the prophets, knowing what they said and what they predicted would happen, if we believe what the Bible says it's going to happen. So are we on the lookout for those things? But lots of people are hesitant to study the prophets, so let's start out with this little thing of why study the prophets. First of all, prophets are a huge portion of the Bible. If you look at your Bibles, 22% of the entire Bible. Why is that going forward? 22% of the entire Bible is prophets. Okay? That's almost a quarter, a fourth of the Bible. Prophetic books. Almost a third of the Old Testament, prophets. Put that in perspective, the whole New Testament is only 23% of the Bible. So,
really?
As much as the New Testament is, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, all the way through Revelation, the prophets make up almost the same amount of space, time given in the text. So it's worth knowing them. They teach us about God and how he interacts with Israel. That's something to really key to remember, is that the prophets are interacting with Israel in a particular historical time. These are the books of the Bible, which I don't know if you guys have never seen this. Does everybody here know the books of the Bible? Like, if I asked you to recite them, could you do it?
I know most of them. Like,
who? Okay.
43 of them.
I want you to recite it without singing. So you can sing it in your head, but I want monotone recitation.
How far do we have to go? Just
the whole Bible.
Oh. All of the Bible.
I don't know.
I'll mumble a few of them, but I think I know.
I definitely would need Bible to write
it
down.
Okay, Denise is going to do it. Let me hear.
I'll try not to sing it. Okay. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, Joshua, Judges, Ruth, 1 and 2 Samuel, 1 and 2 Kings, 1 and 2 Chronicles, Ezra, Nehemiah, Esther, Job, Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, Song of Solomon, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Lamentation, Ezekiel, Daniel, Hosea, Joel, Amos, Obadiah, Jonah, Micah, Nahum, Habakkuk, Zephaniah, Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi.
Nice, that's a good Old Testament. All right. New
Testament.
You
know the New Testament too.
She knows it. I definitely don't know it.
Does anybody else feel confident on the New Testament?
Maybe, I don't know.
You got this, Josh.
Go for it. We'll help you out. We'll give you clues.
Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Acts, Romans. Wow. Is that a far enough? Oh, yeah, wait. Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Acts, Romans. You said 1st and 2nd Corinthians? 1st and 2nd King? No.
That's Old Testament.
Oh, 1st and 2nd Corinthians.
Galatians, Ephesians. Okay, keep going, Caleb. Galatians,
Philippians, Colossians. Did we say Hebrews?
Hebrews,
James, John.
Titus, Timothy.
Oh, forget about Thessalonians, guys.
1st and 2nd Thessalonians. 1st and 2nd Timothy. Hebrews, James. Founder of the church,
First, Second, Third, John, Jude, and Revelation.
Okay.
I don't remember ever hearing Obadiah or.
Obadiah is Old Testament.
Okay. I think it's incredibly helpful to memorize the books of the Bible, but one of the ways to do it is to know what's in them. If you know what's in that book, if you know what it's about, you can place it where it goes in the Bible. If you have a picture associated with, there was Ezekiel was that guy who was a prophet, and he was in the exile, and he, you know, God told him to live naked for a while. That puts it somewhere, and you put it into the prophets, okay? Whereas 1 Thessalonians, that's a letter that Paul wrote, okay? Put it with the Pauline epistles, that sort of thing. The groupings are very helpful, I think. So everybody say them with me. We're going to say them in order. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, Joshua, Judges, Ruth, 1st and 2nd Samuel, 1st and 2nd Kings, 1st and 2nd Chronicles, Ezra, Nehemiah, Esther, Job, Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, Song of Solomon, Isaiah, Jeremiah, and Lamentations, Ezekiel, Daniel, Hosea, Joel, Amos, Obadiah, Jonah, Micah, Nahum, Habakkuk, Zephaniah, Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Acts, Romans, 1st Corinthians, Galatians, Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians, 1st Thessalonians, 2nd Thessalonians, 1st Timothy, 2nd Timothy, Titus, Philemon, Hebrews, James, 1st Peter, 2nd Peter, 1st John, 2nd John, 3rd John, Jude, Revelation.
I said 3rd John twice.
1st, 2nd, 3rd John.
It's 1st John, 3rd John, 3rd John.
Cold.
Yeah. You notice a couple of the groupings that I did. Judges and Ruth. 1st and 2nd Samuel, 1st and 2nd Kings. But over here, I kept them separate. You know why?
Because anybody? They're different. They're talking
separate
about different things.
It's not history.
Yeah. They're not kangaroo?
Because
it's not in the history
the
category.
Successive than the other ones were different times. They were separated by something.
Not really. I mean, in terms of how they were written, yes. In the Hebrew Bible, Samuel's one book, Kings is one book, Judges and Ruth are one book, Jeremiah and Lamentations are one book, Ezra and Nehemiah are one book. So this is how the Jews organized their text. Each line is one book in there. So if you're, that's the original text. We in the English text split it up. First Kings, Second Kings, First Chronicles, Second Chronicles. And it was because of the scrolls. You fill up one scroll, you go to the second scroll. And you start with the next book. The Minor Prophets, all 12 of these would have been one book in the Hebrew Bible. It would have been the Major Prophets, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Lamentations, Ezekiel, Daniel, and then the Book of the 12, or the Minor Prophets. So if you remember that, you remember how many Minor Prophets are there. How many are there?
12.
Because it's the Book of the 12. Ways to remember that. I would highly encourage you to memorize the books of the Bible and to know where they come.
Did you give us that list the way that's broken down or no?
I did not. This is just on my PowerPoint.
Okay.
If you Google it, you can find lots of pictures of almost exactly that. With that breakdown.
Isn't your PowerPoint on your thing?
Yes, it will be. So yeah, you can download the PowerPoint. Oh, yes. Why do we study the prophets? Continuing this question... they're relevant. They often have timeless messages. Example, Hosea's appeal for purity and God's indestructible love. You guys might know Hosea. Anybody know what Hosea's about? Mm-hmm. Anybody other than Denise?
No.
No? Hosea's the one who God told him, go marry.
Oh, yeah. And then she, leaves him over and over again, right?
What?
Gomer.
Yeah. God tells Hosea, go marry a prostitute, Gomer. And she is unfaithful to him. And the first half of Hosea is this whole story about God telling Hosea to go marry a prostitute who is unfaithful. And it's this picture of God and Israel. God being represented by Hosea, Israel being represented by Gomer the prostitute. And Hosea goes and buys Gomer back out of prostitution, out of slavery. So this little graphic I found, I think is pretty good. Each picture sort of, if you have really good eyes, you can...
Not even.
As we get further, you'll get bigger iterations of this picture so you can actually read it.
Jonah's just a whale?
We will find out when we get there.
Yeah, Jonah's a whale.
Big fish.
I can read the first word of every single paragraph.
Good, so you can read the name, yeah?
You read name, yeah.
Not as the one that's like in green.
Yeah,
yeah. Kind of like skateboards.
I can read
the L. And then
these are some of the timeless messages that you can find in some of the minor prophets, and we'll be encountering them all over the next few weeks. And so you'll know this kind of stuff, but like the back of your hand by the time we're done. You can read through that.
Can't wait for Jeopardy.
Can't wait for Jeopardy, right?
Crazy.
You have to get Josh back.
Why else in the New Testament times, in the church times, why study the prophets? Why bother? They tell us a lot about Jesus. They tell us a lot about what he did do in the first coming that confirms that he is the Messiah. And they tell us a lot about what he's going to do in his second coming. As in, how will we know when he's back? That sort of thing. That he teaches more about the future than the New Testament. There's a lot of things in the prophets that are yet to be fulfilled. And in particular, there's a lot of things about Israel and the prophets that are yet to be fulfilled. And so helping us keep an eye on Israel and know sort of what to expect, what's coming down the road. If you don't know a little bit of eschatology, you won't get the prophets. You won't like them. So does anybody remember the basics of eschatology? Anybody remember the basic eschatological truths that we went over when we did eschatology?
Can't say I do.
No? I figured that one was a long shot. No. If you were to guess, what are the essentials of eschatology? What are the essentials of the study of the end times? What do we have to affirm as Christians?
The validity of the Bible.
Validity of the Bible, I would agree with that.
There's the post-trib, pre-trib, mid-trib things.
Yeah, okay, so yeah, you just explain rapture views. So when is the rapture going to happen? Before the tribulation, after tribulation? That's definitely not one of the essentials.
Jesus is coming back.
Jesus is coming back, there you go. That's the absolute essential about eschatology is Jesus is going to come back, and specifically in a human, literal form on the earth, not like in some sort of a spiritual analogous kind of way. He's actually going to return to the earth.
In the same way that he was.
In bodily.
But different.
Yeah. What else? What about us? What are we going to be?
The judge. Be resurrected.
Be resurrected, yeah. Be resurrected in bodily form. Physical bodily form. Where are we going to live for all eternity if you're a believer?
The new earth.
With him in the new earth.
With him in the new earth, yeah.
Where?
Capital H.
These would be some of the theological. The other one that we went over in the non-negotiable eschatological truths was the fact that not everyone's going to be saved.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. I was going to say something along those lines.
Yeah. You don't get saved just because you're a creation of God. You get saved because you're a child of God, and those are two different things. You have been regenerated. You've believed in the Messiah. That makes you a child of God.
Though it is said that he will show mercy on whom he will show mercy to, so there's that.
Which implies that he's not going to show mercy to someone. Right?
Correct. They serve as our examples. If you read Hebrews 11, mm-hmm. He specifically says, all the prophets came before us, acting as an example to us. They stress both the judgment and mercy of God, who always does what he says he will do. If you leave out the prophets in your study of the Bible, you often come away with an incomplete view of God. You either err too much on the side of God's mercy, or you err too much on the side of God's wrath. If you're only reading the historical literature, if you just read the book of Joshua and Judges, you're going to think God is just this vengeful guy who likes to kill people. And if you only read the book of John, you're going to think, God is just this sort of impotent, can't really do anything, touchy-feely sort of guy who isn't really worth following. The prophets balance those two things. In all of the prophets, you get a common theme, which is judgment is coming. If you want to summarize any of the minor prophets, you summarize it with judgment is coming. The question is, who's he saying judgment is coming to, and in what context in each prophet? But almost without exception, I think all the prophets are like, judgment's coming. Like, God's going to really give it to us if we don't shape up our act. And in all but a couple of them, you have a clear picture of grace and mercy and a promise of a future hope for Israel in the midst of the judgment that's coming. There's always this balance. The prophets are incredible, but again, they're quite difficult to understand if you don't know the context. So that's what we're doing today. We're learning the context. We're plunking down into the context. Some other reasons why some people might neglect the study of the prophets, they think they're out of date and irrelevant. Many people are like, we'll say, you know, the church is this whole new thing, different iteration of God's plan on earth, and so the prophets don't matter anymore. They're all done. we as Bible-believing Christians who read the Word of God literally would say, well, there's some stuff that they said would happen that haven't yet, which means it still has to happen. That would be a dispensational view, by the way, if you cared. There are pretty conservative veins of Christianity that would still say, you know, the prophets aren't particularly directly applicable today. And the dispensationalists would say, no, there's quite a few places that are really directly applicable. Why else do we not do them? Why else do we not read them? They require effort and skill to exegete, to understand. You actually have to work to get them. You have to actually stay focused, because if you don't, it gets really easy to do that thing where you just read words and don't really listen to yourself as you're reading, and then you get to the bottom of your page and you're like, hey, I just read a whole page of the Bible and I don't really remember anything that I just read. Have you guys experienced that? Happens a lot in the prophets if you're not engaged in thinking about the context. Some believe that they are already fulfilled and never will be fulfilled, so why bother with them? I already said. Modern church doesn't like the message of the prophets, too. The modern American church is not particularly friendly to the idea of a God who is sovereign, righteous, and judges people. No. Doesn't the Bible say, judge not lest ye be judged? We don't need to read about a God who does all this judging. That would be harshing my mellow, bro.
Wonder who they think
he's
going to do at the end.
Exactly.
Better God.
Only good vibes.
Yeah.
Only good vibes.
Seriously.
Another little test for you. You go to the third page.
This thing?
Can you fill in the timeline? You guys remember this thing?
Yeah, before.
The little bit.
All right.
Kind of looks like a shark.
A little bit.
So, I'm going to toss you the pointer, the laser pointers, the last button with the little like light up thing. I'm going to give you some sort of an event, and I want you to point where on the timeline it happens. So to give you a brief overview, creation happens over here, the vision of the kingdom happens there, return from exile happens there, Jesus happens there.
Wait,
I want to use the clicker thing.
Okay, Ben, you can start. Where does the destruction of the temple by Babylon happen?
In the second drop here.
There you go, right there, 586 BC.
Yes.
I don't know who it is.
Lit. All right.
Lit.
The one that's not narrow.
The what?
The one that's
the
not
one that third looks like a sun.
Oh, you're right.
Okay. Where does the where does Abraham live?
Where does he live?
Yeah, where on the timeline does he live?
Sort of like right after. So this is before this, right?
Correct.
Well,
right?
Yeah.
Like that time's before that time?
Well, defined before.
Before as in like before. Like,
BC goes the opposite way.
Oh, no way. For real? That's dumb. I mean, it's not, but you know what I mean. I think it had, he right, like right here.
No.
You had
no,
it right before.
No. Like right here?
Back a little bit more. Right about there. That's okay. About where Abraham
is.
Was
it before
living,
or
yeah?
After Noah?
After Noah.
So it goes to 1,000 and then
that's
it's...
That's what I was thinking. Yeah, it was from 1,000 to 900
to 800. Oh, it goes back. I thought you meant it goes...
It goes towards zero.
Wait,
and
so the graph goes that way? AD goes back.
What?
You were like,
the graph go that way, not that way?
So it progresses that way. The years of BC are count backwards up into the cross. And then.
And so is it going to end up going backwards? No.
Somebody else.
Good job, Josh.
Where does Solomon's reign occur?
After Abraham.
Nope.
Okay. It's the first king. First king.
It'd be right before the split.
Solomon's the
first
second
king.
Solomon's
the
fourth
second,
king, actually.
He's the fourth king.
Most people think he's the third, but he's the fourth. Right there. Because right after Solomon's reign... The nation divides. We're going to go over all this in just a second. I just want to see about where you are.
I knew it was...
Here would be more...
It was some...
That'd be... So, yeah, so give me the pointer back. So,
you got to underhand it.
I was trying not to...
Oh, this is part of the USB.
Oh, quick shout-out to Stephen's shirt. This is amazing.
Yeah. Thanks. So, this is the basic timeline, okay? creation happens, and then most of Genesis takes place right here. Yeah? You've got creation, then the Tower of Babel, then the... creation, then the flood, then the Tower of Babel, then Abraham. And then we start following Abraham and his descendants, yeah? Who's Abraham's son?
Isaac.
Isaac. Who's Isaac's son? Who's Isaac's son?
Jacob.
And Jacob, Jacob and Esau, and who are Jacob's sons? The 12 tribes of Israel, right? And then we start following Israel all through here. Israel goes into what exile first? Right around here. At the end of the book of Genesis.
Exodus. Eastern.
Right before the Exodus.
Oh, the 400 years?
Egyptian, right?
Oh, yeah.
End of the book of Genesis. All 12 sons are living in Egypt, and Joseph is second-hand man. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They come out of Egypt, and they got the Exodus, and then they go, and Moses gets what in the wilderness?
The law.
We're going real fast. So we're in the book of Exodus right now. He gets the law. He returns. Try to get back into the nation of the land that they were promised. But
no.
What happens?
Nope. They build a golden calf.
Moses is like, no, or God's like, no, you messed up. So
yeah, and so they wander. And then, so that brings us up through Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy is the wandering. What happens right after the wandering,
Joshua
after Deuteronomy?
Enters.
Joshua, the book of Joshua. What does he do?
He enters and conquers and doesn't conquer at all like he was.
Conquers the land. Good. So they go in, they set up shop, and then the country devolves into the time of the judges. Right? Judge, the thing that we're going to go over all this in more detail. That's why I'm going real fast. Judges, the theme of the judges is everyone did what was right in their own eyes. After the judges, you've got anyone?
Ruth,
that's the end of the judges, and then the kings, yeah. So you got 1st and 2nd Kings, 1st and 2nd Chronicles, and the books. So Samuel, 1st and 2nd Kings, 1st and 2nd Chronicles. All those are talking about the reigns of the kings. And the 1st and 2nd Samuel happens right here, the United Empire. So there are three kings covered in the books of 1st and 2nd Samuel. Who are they?
Saul.
David.
Solomon.
Solomon, yeah. Right after Solomon, Solomon's son Rehoboam gets into it with Jeroboam. God promises Jeroboam, yeah, you're gonna take the kingdom, and so they split. They split into the northern kingdom, boom, and the southern kingdom, boom. So that's what this represents. You got the northern kingdom of Israel and the southern kingdom of Judah. And so you got two different nations going on, and they're all setting up their own kings, and they're all doing their own thing. And the books of Kings and Chronicles are going back and forth between the two different nations. They're saying the king of Israel was reigning this way, and he fought these battles, and he won these things, and then he died, and he did this good. So the nation of Israel, we'll follow them for a second. What happens to them? They soldier on. How many good kings do they have?
A couple.
Not a lot.
Okay.
Zero.
Nation of Israel has zero good kings. And then what happens in 722 BC?
Assyria
comes in, wipes them off the map. Yeah.
Oh. So
that was southern nation of Judah. They have their own kings, and about how many kings, good kings, were there?
Five or six,
depending on how you count them. They soldier on. You got kings like Hezekiah, Josiah, Uzziah. These are some of the good kings.
All the Ayahs,
and
Daniel.
And then destruction of Babylon.
Destruction by Babylon. Babylon comes in, destroys the nation of Judah, and takes them into
exile.
Yeah,
exile.
This is the Babylonian exile. This is when Daniel and his three friends are taken into exile, right?
Oh yeah.
Jeremiah taken into exile. Ezekiel, an exile prophet. They're living in the nation of Babylon right here, and then. What books detail the returns from Babylon? Back into the
promised
land. Ezra and Nehemiah are about what happens, how do they get back into the land of Israel. Then you've got intertestamental period where nothing is really written, and then we pick up in Matthew with Jesus in the New Testament.
And Jesus.
If you know what this line represents, this will help your Bible study so much. When you see that this is one continuous story starting in Genesis and ending in Revelation, and it's following this one particular lineage, the lineage from Adam all the way down through the nation of Israel to Mary, producing the Messiah, Jesus. One story, one line that you're following to get to Jesus from the beginning of the book. So we're going to go through this history in a little bit more detail. But in here, who's reigning in Israel and Judah in here? What kind of government have they set up?
Kings.
So the kings are... Yeah.
Was the top one Judah or Israel?
Top one is Israel.
Okay.
Yeah, if you just think north and south. North is Israel, south is Judah. And hopefully when you see the map, that'll clear that up.
Stevens. Yes. Is Judah around the world? Chronological organization of the books.
Yeah, yeah, because it's not to scale.
That's what.
Isn't Judah still around?
No.
No. Well, I mean, sort of is. I mean,
they're not together.
The Jews that
like a geographical place called Judah.
No,
there's Assyria or Syria.
Oh, never mind. I'm thinking of Jordan.
Jordan. While the kings are reigning in this time period. They're doing the government side of the nation. Who's doing the religion side of the nation? Priests and?
Levites.
Levites, types of priests. Who's speaking for God?
Prophets.
So, again, throughout the books of Samuel, Kings, and Chronicles, you get all these stories of the king was talking, and then the prophet Isaiah came and spoke to King Uzziah. The king was reigning, and then the prophet so-and-so came and spoke to King so-and-so. They're interacting, and then the kings are supposedly getting words from God through the prophets. And
is there an easy way to remember which ones were prophets to Israel and which ones were prophets to Judah?
Easy way, no.
No. Okay.
I gave you the next page. So this packet is full of essentially reference material for you.
Thank you.
Also, I just want to be sure that this is something that I didn't think about for a long time, and I didn't realize where Israel was in the world until I was about 15. So I wish somebody had shown me something like this earlier. And we know where we're looking at right now. What's that continent?
Africa.
Yeah.
It's
okay.
On the top of the
over there.
So if we zoom in a little bit, other way. This is Africa. This is the
Mediterranean,
that's
no,
the Nile,
the big
right?
Thing is Israel, right?
The Red Sea.
Top
there.
It's right there.
That's the Mediterranean.
On the right.
This is where Israel is. Everybody with me?
Yes.
Wait, so what's that whole big thing?
So Israel's right there.
What big chunk?
The big chunk right
to the
next
right
to
of it? That's Saudi Arabia. That's the Arabian Peninsula.
Arabian Peninsula.
So Israel's just that top part.
It's
right
by the tail
of the big
bird.
Top of the big boot.
Yeah, that's the Red Sea.
The Mediterranean Sea looks like a bird.
That's the Mediterranean Sea. That is the Jordan River. That's the Dead Sea.
Oh.
That's the
Black Sea.
No. Sea of Galilee.
Yeah, that's
right.
Black Sea.
Right.
Wait, Stephen, zoom out real quick.
Are most of the seas that were mentioned
the Mediterranean Sea look like a bird?
That's funny, Ben.
Yes.
I see you, Ben. Mm-hmm. You're funny. I got it.
Wait, what are you pointing at?
Do you know what I'm talking
yes.
about, Steven?
See?
Explain to Denise.
It doesn't look like a bird to me.
Where's the face?
What doesn't look like a bird?
It looks more like a dragon than a bird.
Yeah, I think
oh,
it's
I
like
thought
a
you
bird.
Were talking about... Never mind. I thought you were talking about flipping the bird. Because it does look like...
Where do you see that?
Hey, where do you see that?
I see a boot
you
over
see
there.
It?
No.
No.
Oh, you point it out, Stephen. Let me see.
What world are y'all looking at?
That's the middle finger, and those are the curled up other fingers.
Oh, I guess so.
That is very.
That's
it looks
a
more like
sign.
A
cross.
Oh. It looks like the sea. That's
okay.
Hilarious.
So this is Israel.
Can you zoom in on
it? Looks like a bunch of water.
You should have. So, if you turn to the second page in your handout, we're going to talk through that history a little bit more.
Prophets over here, or the
way
kings of.
But this succession of maps helps you out.
This is the red
yeah.
line. Oh.
The red line is current, the current nation of Israel. Sans Gaza. It's changed a little bit, but.
So this is the most current?
The red line is.
Oh.
So this first one is what it looked like when Solomon was king, the nation of Israel. The second one is what it looked like right after Solomon was king when it divided into north and south. And then the third one is what it looked like when the Maccabean... So just referencing friends. When the Maccabeans were ruling, this is after the exile return. This is what Judah looked like. Yes, after Alexander the Great. This is like 90 years before Jesus. So about the time when Jesus is coming, this is what Judea looked like. Again, putting the history together.
Oh, it's Veggie Tales.
I know.
He's not on the top
of Veggie Tales. So, yeah, you got Abraham up here, right? The sacrifice of Isaac. Then you got Moses. You got Joshua conquering the land. And then you got the judges. Who's that?
Samson.
If you get out your Bibles.
Samson. Moses.
Oh, my Bible's already out.
Moses.
In your Bible, flip to like the very first page where it says contents. And it lists all of the books. Or if you're doing this electronically, go to where you click on the book that you want to read.
Oh, okay.
The Bible.
But just look at the list. Okay. This is essentially the first, what, seven books of the Bible. Is this summary right here. Yeah, Genesis, and I want you to be able to pick up in the story. I don't expect you to know everything that happens in Genesis, because there's a lot of stories in Genesis. I want you to be able to pick up and trace the history of Israel from coming out of Egypt up until the exile. I want you guys to have that timeline or that series of events pretty clear in your minds. So, we're going to go through it a little bit more slowly. Coming out of Egypt with the Exodus. That's the book of Exodus, alright? So we're in book 2 now. Halfway through the book of Exodus, they have the wandering, right? The you're not going into the land. Which should prompt the question, why do they want to go into the land? Yeah?
Because it's the promised land.
Milk and honey.
Who promised it when?
God promised it to Abraham.
God promised it to Abraham. And what land did he promise Abraham?
The land between the Nile and the Euphrates.
The land between the Nile and the Euphrates. And what book? What chapter of what book does that happen in?
Genesis chapter something.
Genesis chapter
7?
15.
No.
15! 12, 15, 17, 22 are the four times that the promise is repeated to Abraham. So, that's why they're going into the land. They get rejected, and so they wander. And so that's what Numbers is about. The book of Numbers is the wandering. You know, the 40 years. We didn't have a lot of fun in the desert.
We didn't have a lot of
fun in the sand. That is, they're singing about the book of Numbers. Okay, the not a lot of fun that they had in the desert and in the sand.
We're tired of bread. We don't want bread.
Deuteronomy. What's the book of Deuteronomy about?
All the people lost.
It's the second.
It's the laws.
Of the law.
It's the second telling of the law, right? So you had Exodus, you come out and you start getting the law. Leviticus, you get the whole law. Numbers, we start telling the history of in between when they're wandering. And then Deuteronomy is the retelling, the second telling of the law. So what Deuteronomy is come from Greek word, deutero tu, namos, law, second law. Second telling of the law. Deuteronomy is when Joshua is about to go in and take the nation of it, the land that was promised to them, and he's retelling the law to this new generation.
What you're getting yourself into.
Exactly.
So what was Numbers? What would you say?
Numbers is mostly the history of the wanderings. Joshua, what's Joshua about?
Conquering the land.
Right?
Not conquering.
Starts
all
with
the land.
With Jericho. He comes in. He takes Jericho. He splits into two different campaigns. He goes south. He goes north. He makes a deal with some Moabites and doesn't really take everything that he's supposed to, and that's all in the Book of Joshua. You should read it. It's quite a compelling book. It's like reading a war story, because that's what it is. But for the most part, they take a lot of the land that God had promised them. Not all of it. And so they set up their nation. They're like, all right, we are a nation. We are Israel. So they're set up right here. He comes across, conquers Jericho, comes down, conquers the south, goes north, conquers most of up here. And then they set up and they divide the land up. And do I have a map with the division?
But why would they come in there since they're coming from Egypt?
I don't have a map with the division of how they broke it up.
I don't have a map in mind.
Denise says she does.
Well, yeah, but it's a map in my Bible.
Oh. Can you show us where they were wandering?
They were wandering right there.
Got it. Well, then why did they go up and then come to the ocean?
What?
Why? You said they, like, went up and then
they went up this way and crossed into Jericho.
From the west to the east.
Correct.
From the west to the east, and then they went up, like where Jordan, modern-day Jordan is, but then they had to cross back over
to get
to the west.
Jericho.
Gotcha.
So that's when the Book of Joshua starts, when they cross the Jordan. They're crossing that river right there.
And the Euphrates and Tigris.
Yeah, Euphrates is up here. That's the Euphrates. Tigris is right there. And the Nile's right there. So God promised him land. God promised Abraham land that stretches from the great river, that's the Euphrates, to the river in Egypt, the Nile.
That's a lot.
Yeah. So until Israel, or the descendants of Abraham, possess land that stretches from this portion to that portion via the line of Isaac, because he said that was the son of promise by which he would fulfill the promise of the land. That promise is yet to be fulfilled, and it still has yet to be fulfilled to this day. The descendants of Abraham via Isaac have not controlled the land from the river Nile to the river.
Do they control any more than they have since?
They control this portion today.
So about the same amount?
Correct.
The stuff that's further east is Iran, Iraq, Iraq, Pakistan, Jordan.
Oh.
Lebanon is further north.
Syria.
Well, ISIS, or whatever it's called nowadays.
ISIL. The Levant.
It's called ISIS. It's still called Syria.
Yeah.
Well, the Syria's
Islamic State of Iraq and Syria.
And then the Arab something or other.
Joshua comes in, conquers most of the land, and they set up shop, right? They're like, we're going to be our nation, we're going to follow God's law, and it takes them about 20 years to stop doing that. Then you get the period of the next book in your Bible?
Judges.
Right? What is the... Somebody summarize the book of the Judges for me. What's going on during the time of the Judges?
They're just like, we're going to do what you want.
Well, let me tell you.
Cameron, go first.
People were not following the law. Judges were like, hey, follow the law. And then they died, and then people followed the law, and then they repeat the cycle.
And then they repeat the cycle. Yeah, very good summary. It's just this cycle of, we're going to follow God, and then them not doing it, and so God brings in a nation to judge them, and then raises up some leader to get them out of it.
And daggers and poop.
And daggers and poop, yes. Ehud was a great judge. Ehud is Nathan's favorite judge. He's the one who kills... Is an Amalekite.
Oh, right,
leader.
The dagger goes all the way in.
Buried in his stomach fat?
Yeah.
That is Judges. It's just this cycle. It's this cycle of we're going to follow God, but in reality, everyone did what was right in their own eyes. In those days, there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in their own eyes. You cap off the end of the Judges with the book of Ruth, and this is kind of the leading you into the next book. What's the book of Ruth about?
Ruth.
Ah, common mistake.
I thought
Naomi.
Naomi, there you go. The book of Ruth is about Naomi.
Common mistake.
It's okay.
Common mistake.
That one was supposed to get you. That's okay. Book of Ruth is about Naomi, but at the end of the Book of Ruth, anybody know how the Book of Ruth ends? Anybody want to flip to the end of the Book of Ruth?
That little kid is born.
That little kid is born, right? Ruth.
Ruth was promised to be in the line of Jesus, in the line of the Messiah. Because of her taking care of Naomi.
Yes.
And she married Boaz.
Ruth marries Boaz, and then if you go to Ruth chapter 4,
Obed, that's his name.
Verses 18 to 22, now these are the generations of Perez. Perez is the father, that's right. These are the generation of Perez. Perez fathered Hezron, Hezron fathered Ram, Ram fathered Amminadab, Amminadab fathered Nahshon, Nahshon fathered Salmon. Salmon fathered Boaz, the guy that Ruth married. Boaz fathered Obed, Ruth's son. Obed fathered Jesse, and Jesse fathered
David.
And so, you as a Jew are reading this, you're like, oh, that's why we've been reading this book, is to know where David came from. Got it. You get to Samuel, and we're not really talking about David anymore. We're talking about this guy named Samuel. Samuel comes along, and he is the last judge and kind of the first in the revitalization of the prophets. So he's the last judge. He's the first prophet since Moses. Can we count Joshua as a prophet or not? That's kind of the question. It's like, generally speaking, his character was more defined as conqueror than prophet. But he did do prophetic things. But Moses specifically calls himself a prophet of God. And so that's why I say first prophet since Moses.
But then Moses appointed him as his successor. So successor in what? In leader, in prophet?
Yeah. And there are other prophets, there are other minor prophets living during this time. Anybody think of a female prophet who lived during the time of the judges?
That's true.
Nope.
What? Can't remember her name, but I know she exists.
Deborah.
Deborah.
Which means the.
Because it's not spelled Deborah as in like, it's spelled Deborah, right?
Samuel comes along though, and he is like the guy. He hears directly from God, and that's what the first couple chapters of Samuel are about. They're about his birth and then his call. God calls to Samuel and says, Samuel, and I'm going to talk to you now. You're going to be my voice for the people of Israel. And God tells Samuel, you're going to get a king. You're going to appoint a king because the people want it. What a king does he appoint? Saul. That's what the rest of the book of Samuel, 1 Samuel, is about. It's about Saul's reign as king. About halfway through chapter 16, what happens to Saul's reign as king?
It ends. And he turns into... No, not yet.
He falls on his sword.
Oh, does he?
No, that he doesn't turn into...
Halfway through the book of 1 Samuel...
No, that's wrong, guys.
Chapter 16. Anybody remember what happened in chapter 16 of 1 Samuel?
Saul Paul from the New Testament.
Oh.
What's
that?
Yeah.
This is Saul, the king of Israel.
Saul is told to find another king.
Yeah, Samuel's told to find another king.
Oh, this is the...
One who will be a man after my own heart.
16:7.
Yeah.
Is Saul the one with David and Joshua and Caleb?
With David.
Is that this
Saul? David and Jonathan.
David and Jonathan, that's what I meant. Oh, yeah. That was not good.
So that's what the second half of 1 Samuel is about, is following David while Saul is king. And it's looking at what David does, and Saul's trying to kill him and chase him down, and so he forms a band of mighty men, and he leads sort of this rebellion against Saul. 1 Samuel ends with Saul's death. He falls on his sword, like somebody mentioned.
Doesn't the guy who watched Saul fall on his sword go and tell David, and David kills him?
No, didn't the other guy fall on his sword too?
I honestly don't remember.
Fall on their sword? You mean like
killed himself?
They just put out the
What'd they do?
Second Samuel.
And David was anointed by Saul
By Samuel.
Where's Jonathan?
In chapter 16.
Jonathan.
So he's anointed king. But there's still like 17 chapters before he actually becomes king.
So was he anointed? He was anointed before. He was anointed while Saul was still alive.
Correct. Yes.
Which that's why Saul. That's why Saul kind of went loco, because the spirit left.
Yeah.
Him.
Correct.
He got like a. Was it an evil spirit?
And an evil spirit from the Lord.
Mm-hmm. Wait.
Came to torment Saul. That's exactly what the text says.
Wait. Was it?
Yeah.
Basic.
Mess with your pneumatology a little bit.
It's basically to enforce that David was the new king.
Yes.
And that Saul him.
2 Samuel follows David's reign as king. And again, the first half is really good. He's doing the right thing until chapter 7 comes along.
Is it David or Daniel?
David.
Or not chapter 7. What am I thinking of? Chapter 11. comes along, and what does David do?
Watching the girl cleanse
Bathsheba.
Yeah, you got the whole David Bathsheba thing. Chapter 12, you have a prophet who shows up to speak to David. What prophet? Nathan, yeah. Nathan shows up, Nathan shows up, and he tells David, I know what you did. I know what you did.
It's all your fault. I know what you did. I know what you did.
The rubber duck. David repents, but his reign is never really the same. Then we follow some of David's sons, Solomon and Absalom, and some of the incestuous things that go on. And,
one of them died, though.
Isn't Absalom king?
Well, they're both dead.
Yeah, they fight over who's going to take over right the nation. Absalom doesn't really ever become king. He's prince.
No, with the whole Bathsheba thing, didn't one of David's sons die,
right? Yes, I forget what's his name.
The lady's husband.
No, but I thought there was this whole thing where
my whole life has been a lie.
His faith was all messed up because of the whole Bathsheba thing, or just in general, or whatever. And then things got really, really bad for him after he killed the husband. So one of his sons.
What's his name? There's the son of Saul prior to David becoming king takes over the nation as king for about a year and a half.
Isn't that the story about the guy's head being caught in the twigs?
No, that's Absalom.
That's Absalom.
That's David's kid.
So the third king is David.
The third king is David. Yes, I always forget his name. And nobody really ever counts him as an official king, but technically he was.
Okay.
Second Samuel follows then David to his death. Or David, kind of to the end of his reign, but chapter 1 of 1 Kings follows David to his death. Then 1 Kings picks up with the reign of anyone? Solomon.
Solomon.
So where are we in the timeline?
Right there.
So now, if you turn in your packets,
who is it? Are you turning it around?
I don't think so.
Someone just added me too. It was probably Teresa. That's who just added me.
If you turn in your packets to the Kings of Judah chart, this is a great little reference thing. It's got a lot of information, so I wanted to walk you through it just briefly. It looks like this.
See,
nope,
you don't even have it listed.
I know.
The
dates are all, I mean, according to certain historians, the dates are a little bit negotiable. But what this does is it tells you the king of the particular nation, notice that, so Judah over here and Benjamin went with Judah in the south. 10 tribes in north that became the nation of quote-unquote Israel. And then it follows the king in question.
Number 9, Amaziah, he says he was a good king. If I remember correctly, wasn't he praising the Edom's idols?
I don't remember, but I can check. This is where I start getting a little fuzzier. Just a lot of names. But I can check for you.
Jehoiachin was only 3 months.
Well, is Uzziah the same as Amaziah? So what does that mean? Why does it have an Amaziah in parentheses?
It has Azariah.
Azariah is what I meant. Oh, you're right. It's different people.
Rehoboam and Jeroboam are the first two kings of the divided nation. Rehoboam is Solomon's son, so he takes over Judah in the south. And Benjamin, tribe of Benjamin. This one has the breakup of the nations. So you can see Benjamin, Judah, and Simeon, really. Reuben, Gad, Manasseh, Naphtali, Dan, Asher, Zebulun, Issachar, Manasseh again, and Ephraim and Dan are the 10 tribes of the north. You got these two different nations. Jeroboam takes over up here, Rehoboam takes over down here, and now we've got these two different nations soldiering along through history. And these are the kings. And this chart tells you the king, how long he lived, his character, and the prophet who was ministering to him. So I really like this chart, particularly for that last column. It helps you remember who are the pre-exilic prophets. If I say the phrase pre-exilic, do you know what I'm talking about?
Pre-exile.
Before the exile into Babylon. Before that little half-circle dip in the timeline. Yeah.
So, Amaziah conquered Edom, and he brought the Ark back with him and set them up.
Okay.
So then why is it that you haven't missed out the a good king? Is there a reason for that?
I don't know, because I didn't create this. Okay. But I'm guessing what they went off of was the description of the king in the text. Because almost always when you read the text, it's like, such and such was a king, and he followed God. Some of them are like are medium kings in Judah. So Amaziah might be one of those. He started out good, and then in his old age turned bad.
Yeah.
But they just went with, if anybody said they said he was good at all, they put good, even though he was a half and halfer. And then the last five kings of Judah, because the destruction of Babylon was, or the destruction of Jerusalem by Babylon wasn't like this clear cut. Babylon comes in, destroys the temple, and takes over the nation, and everything ends. It's like there were three different assaults from Babylon on the nation, and three different exiles. So the way you remember them, the first one is Daniel, he and his three friends. The second one is Jeremiah, and the third one is the temple destroyed. Those are the three events to link with the three exiles. First Daniel, then Jeremiah, then temple. Yeah. I'm seeing a few glazed eyes.
Is Daniel's three friends? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego?
Yes.
Okay, you keep saying it, I'll just clarify.
Yeah. Cool. This other prophets overview chart, again, it sort of summarizes the prophets, I think, in slightly helpful ways. Lets you know their name, what their name means, when they were prophesying, most likely. Obviously, these are guesses. And then the who they were talking to and where they lived. I think that one's helpful. Everybody understand how the nation is functioning at this time when the prophets are speaking?
Not very well.
Not very well. Is how the nation is functioning?
It's like off.
Or were you describing how you understand?
The nation is functioning.
Okay.
Now I was going to say the same thing. Isn't it kind of like off and on, though?
Yeah, not very well. It's.
I was right.
They're functioning.
For the most part, it's bad. But
they're trying to function.
Good.
They're averaging about 20 years per king in Judah.
And is that bad?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, some of them are really short. Some of them are a little bit longer. But they're going back and forth as bad king, good king, bad king, good king, bad king, bad king, good king. And in Israel, it's just like all of them are bad. They're just like, we're going to worship Baal, and we're never going to even think about worshiping God again.
Does that mean that the prophets were
frustrated?
Well, yeah, frustrated, but maybe not very good, or not very, you know, not very effective. That's the word I'm trying to cover.
I don't think so. I think they just had really bad kings.
Yeah.
If you read First, I mean, you got Elijah, Elisha, Amos, Jonah, Abijah. Some of the more well known minor prophets are the ones ministering in Israel. It's just that they're really evil.
Just don't listen.
Exactly. So, this is going to be a helpful reference moving forward as we turn to a new prophet. We're going to be like, what is this prophet all about? And then your back page is, again, another timeline to try and organize. I'm trying to give you as many different ways to organize the same information. I don't know if that's confusing or helpful.
I think it's helpful.
Okay.
I think it will be helpful. I just need to take it home and, like, process
it. Yeah, this is something that you kind of have to marinate with a little bit.
It's not making any sense.
I use that one, too.
The thing on the screen that's on the...
Wait, so is this different? Is this what you're showing us right now?
Yeah, I don't have this one on the screen. So this is, again, it's another way of organizing the same information. You've got Israel on the top, Judah on the bottom, and... gives you the century over on the left-hand side, lists the king, In Judah, it lists if they were a good king. And then it lists the prophet when he's ministering over on the left-hand side. Kind of what, so you can see what kings are living while he's speaking for God.
And the things on the right-hand side are what?
It also gives you, it lets you know who's ruling in Assyria at the time of specific kings. Okay. To let you know, they're at war almost constantly through the period of the kings. Okay? They're constantly trying to expand their borders. This is what the 8th, 9th, 10th century BC was like. Everyone was always at battle and at war trying to expand their nation. Get their borders bigger. Because you have more land, you have more resources, you're richer. You're a better off country.
So is this also during the reign of the war that begins with the reign of the empires?
Yes.
So Judah is battling Syria along with Israel, and Israel falls before Judah does.
Correct.
And then Babylon comes, takes them over.
Babylon comes, takes Assyria over, and then marches straight on down and takes Judah over too.
So what happened to Babylon? Oh, will you go first?
Denise.
I have two questions.
Yeah.
One, and I think he may have touched on it. So Israel and Judah were warring against each other, or no?
Yes and no. I mean, not as vehemently as the others. It was kind of like this, well, we got common history. We'll just agree to disagree on who's in charge of our land and our nation.
Okay. And then my next question is, I noticed that, like, the prophets are listed in both Israel and Judah. So, like, Obadiah, is he prophesying to Israel and to Judah?
No, that's just to give you a visual of when.
Oh, okay.
More just timeline. Not,
got it.
Not,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good question, though.
Why are their sizes not proportionate?
Yeah, the sizes are proportionate.
Because some of the kings in Israel reigned for a lot longer than some of the kings in Judah. So when you had a king in Israel who reigned for 20 years and is taking up one line, it's going to be shorter than you had three kings who took that same 20 years in Judah. So,
oh.
See what I'm saying?
You're right.
Say it again?
Because it's dependent on the kings, not the necessarily the years.
The actual size.
So the amount of time that those prophets prophesied to certain kings.
Correct. But so yeah, you notice how Obadiah is shorter in Israel's thing than in Yeah, see, Jehoram, Ahaziah, and Athaliah, they only reigned 8 years, 1 year, and 6 years consecutively, right? Whereas up when in the north, you have Jehoram and Jehu who reigned 12 years and 28 years. So Obadiah is living during that time, but he's that time spans more kings in the south than it does in the north.
Gotcha. I didn't realize it lined up with the ones on the right.
Yeah.
I have another question. Sorry, I'm
full. Yeah, no questions.
Okay,
you're good.
So if you go back to the prophets overview page, that one that's
mm-hmm.
you have up on screen, like, so whenever, so does Obadiah, the first one listed, it says he's, I know they divide up the prophets between Judah and Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Is that dependent on who they're speaking to or where they're from?
Usually it's when you talk about who they're whether or not they're a prophet to Israel or prophet to Judah, it's who they're speaking to, not
right.
necessarily where they're from.
Okay. Because,
sometimes they would go across.
Okay,
lines.
Because I'm just like Edom and Nineveh.
Yeah.
And, okay.
Yeah. So what's listed here is who they're speaking to. Who their book is addressed to.
Okay.
And then home is where they're actually living. Yeah.
Oh, so where, what, so after, you said, Babylon, took over Assyria, right?
Yeah.
And you said they came down and then took over Judah.
Yeah, so at the beginning, when you have the divided kingdom, Israel up here, Judah down here, you have Assyria growing as a nation up here. 722, they come in and take down the northern kingdom. The southern, they try to take the southern kingdom, and southern kingdom resists and pushes them back. So then you have Assyria sort of running this whole show, including the area that used to be the northern kingdom for a couple hundred years. Babylon amasses its empire, and it goes on this rampage trying to conquer the whole world. And it conquers Assyria, and then comes down and takes over all the land that Assyria had, then comes down and takes Jerusalem. So that's the reason for that is topography. What is right here?
Desert.
Yes. So you follow the river. River means life. So they're marching up this way into Assyria. They take over Assyria, and then they march back down, following the coastline, and they take over whatever's here. But you don't usually go across the desert because you're going to die.
Unless you're wandering for however many years.
Yeah, their wandering took place right around here.
So after that, what happens to Babylon?
That's four.
After that, Babylon gets overtaken by Persia. Persia gets overtaken by Greece. Greece gets overtaken by Rome.
And then it's the Roman Empire for...
Then it's the Roman Empire for the rest of the New Testament.
It's a long time.
If this is new to you, this is overwhelming. Just take a deep breath. Just marinate with the information. If this is a refresher for you, good. The more you refresh it, the better it sticks next time.
These are sharp breaths, not deep breaths.
I love this
chart,
though.
Sharp.
This chart in particular is your friend. It helps you keep the king straight. My last little bit of... So I'm already over time, but my last little bit conviction. If you're in this room, so listen if these things apply to you. If you're in this room, you have been a Christian for more than 5 years, you're over the age of 17, and you...
Are you only speaking in terms of whole years?
What does that mean?
Because
no.
Technically I'm older than 17, but I'm not yet 18.
What is a whole year? Oh.
No, you're at least 17.
Oh, like how you haven't lived 18 okay. years, but you're actually... I get it.
So if you've been a Christian for 5 years or over the age of 17, and you know how to read, which I think everyone in here does... If you haven't read the whole Bible...
You know what assuming does.
You're slacking.
If you haven't read the whole Bible, you're slacking more harshly. You need to seriously question how much you believe what you claim to believe. If you're claiming to be a Christian who says that God has spoken to earth, the guy who created the world and who will judge it one day, created the world and spoke through this book, and you've believed this for at least 5 years, have been able to read this whole time, and haven't bothered to get around to seeing what he said, you seriously question whether or not you actually believe it or if you're just fooling yourself.
So you're just making sure that every book is read, not like you took a lot of time.
Yeah, not that you just sat down and read the whole thing, but I mean, from cover to in this order, but... Yeah, if you haven't read everything that's in here at least once, you've had 5 years where you've been claiming to believe this, and you've been able to read this whole time. And I say 17 because that means you were 12 when you started believing at least. And I say by the time you're 12, you should be a thinking adult. You know how to think.
You should.
13. All right, so we'll go with 18 then. My point is... It's kind of in that if that applies to you, if you haven't done that, it's nut up or shut up time. It's do you believe what you say you believe, then back it up. Particularly for the sections of books that we've been talking about, the books that everyone ignores, 1 Kings, 2 Kings, 1 Chronicles, Samuel, those are actually easy reads.
And
those read, yeah, they read like books. They read like a story,
narrative.
If you've ever sat down and read a narrative book, that's what it reads like. And so, I would highly, highly encourage you, in as strong terms as possible, without actually using expletives, to get on it. Read this book. And if you need help, if you want accountability, I always recommend read it in chronological order instead of the order that they appear in this, that we've organized them. Because if you read it in chronological order, it makes more sense. You can follow the story that we've just been talking about for this last hour. You can find chronological reading plans online. You just Google chronological Bible reading plan. It'll tell you what sections to read each day. And it'll get you done in a year or 2 years. Or, you know, if you actually believe that the creator of the universe spoke, maybe try and get it done in 3 months. I've read books this long in 3 months. So you sit down every night and read it. But, you know, kind of think it's important. So that's my lecture to finish it off. Make sure you feel good about yourself. You know, that's always my main concern, right?
Comfort.
Yeah.
I don't feel like that's true. I don't think.
If that doesn't apply to you, then you don't need to listen to that lecture. But maybe you do. Maybe because, like, if that 3 years down the road and then it does apply to you and you still haven't done anything about it, get on it. There is time to rectify the situation.
Well, there is time. Jesus may come back.
Correct.
True.
So hurry up before he does.
But yeah, when he does return, well, you know, you were going to come back, so I didn't bother, is not going to be a legitimate excuse.
I can cross-reference.